and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls, the first NYPD Blue Balls of 2024. And I have to apologize at the front. I think this episode is cursed. The first time we tried to record an episode for season 8, episode 6, we had issues with the recording, and then just trying to schedule a replacement got absolutely insane. And we decided to just get it out, get it over with, and get over the hump. And we recorded an episode through the phone like we used to when we were on different coasts. And it's not a commentary episode. We just recorded after we watched it and discussed parts we liked about the episode and thought things we thought were weird. I hope you enjoy it the way it is. There's a lot of weird edits and the sound is odd. I'm sorry, but we'll be back to much better stuff in the new year. But we just have to get through this cursed episode, season 8, episode 6, Righting Wrongs. And here we go. This is NYPD Blue Balls. I'm Kirk, and the other voice is Kyle, talking about every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And this is season 8, episode 6, Righting Wrongs.
So we are starting.
Okay. Yeah, we're starting. I think it's because I was standing. I think that's what was causing the robot voices, because I sat down to look at what was going on and the robot voices stopped. Basically, in a quick explanation to anyone who's now listening, I believe this episode of NYPD Blue Balls is cursed. We've tried to record one that was like an old commentary episode, and it turned out really messed up. And then just scheduling this one today has not been helpful. It's been pretty up and down, and I wasn't sure if we were even going to record today. And then we were having technical difficulties. So it really feels like...
Hey, cool, quick question.
Yeah.
Who gives a fuck, dude? Let's talk about underage rape.
Okay. Well, this episode has... it actually starts with the DOA being a girl who was clearly strangled and dumped in front of a building. They identify the school she went to because Russell remembers the school motto of her boyfriend's sister when she was in high school. And I don't know if they were trying to, like, give you the parallel, like, oh, the random things you remember, because I don't remember the faces of all the dead people I've seen, but I somehow remember that the one random saying from the school of my boyfriend's sister in high school.
Like, yeah, that's because she was having sex in the sweater, so that's why she remembers it.
Yeah, so it was an odd moment there.
You remember shit from your past all the time. It's like stupid.
Yeah, it was kind of a... They do that all the time where they have these weird human moments in the midst of a dead body. And that one
not a human moment.
And that one was Russell's going like, oh, I know that school. As the investigation continues, they find out that it is a 15-year-old high school girl who was assaulted and strangled to death. Her mother was as present as she could be, but she was working nights as a nurse. And I thought that actress did a great job. I don't know if your opinion on the mother. I thought she did a good job as a distressed, sad, single mother.
Yeah, we've kind of come a long way from nurses, because it seems like there's a nurse shortage and they can work like any hours they want. But she was told she could only work nights and was going to get fired. That was kind of crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty intense that she essentially said, I told them I didn't want to work nights and I was scared of losing my job. And it was like, you're a single mom. Like, shouldn't there be some consideration? Like, hey, she has to take care of another human being here. We have to work out something.
But this is late 90s, early 2000s. We don't care about single moms yet.
Not yet. We'll get there.
Let me take that back. We care about single white moms, so this is weird that she's not getting any help.
As they investigate further, they go through her personal chest and find really gross and detailed descriptions about sexual escapades with a 20-year-old dude. that were graded by a teacher, which is important, that they were turned into a teacher who did not turn them into the authorities.
How hard do you think the mom had to, like, break into that desk? Because it sounded like, she made it sound like she had to, like, get a crowbar and was, like, at it for a couple hours.
Well, I mean...
Is that funny to you? Like, I really thought about that.
I didn't think about that at all.
She made it sound like, she's like, I had to, like, crack open that chest. It was like, she's 15. Like, you bought it. Did you buy her, like, the greatest safe in the world? Like, what's up?
Well, she wanted... I mean, she really didn't want anybody in that thing.
I'll just tell you this right now. Anything that I owned up until, like, maybe 18, 20, mom or dad could have gotten into because they most likely bought it and knew they could.
For all we know... Hey, like, look, we don't know this 15-year-old. We don't know if she was taking shop class, if she made, like, a jigsaw-style... trapped box to keep all of her stuff inside. That mom had to go through a game.
I know a lot of Catholic girls who got really into shop class. Yeah, a lot of nuns are like, hey, come on over, let's cut up some wood.
A lot of girls at the all-girls Catholic school getting into STEM also...
in the late 90s to the 2000s. Really pushing that STEM on girls in Catholic school.
Well, they eventually talk to the teacher, and this scene, like, because we've seen all these episodes a handful of times, and...
Weirdo. Who dresses like that as a teacher?
That's what you were weirded out by? Not the fact that he's like, yeah, I read them. The first one, you know, real visceral, real detailed. And you're like, oh, when she was describing rape? Yeah, they tend to get really detailed when they describe that type of situation.
Have you ever taken a creative writing class?
I have indeed.
Yeah, was your teacher not like that?
Okay, but I also never described a assault.
Okay, fair enough. But like, what if you were writing a story and there was just an assault in the story? Like, you got to respect the person, kind of like what they're saying. You know what I mean? What if it is just a story?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I think it's different if they're 15, because a 15-year-old shouldn't be coming up with a story that graphic. And they don't really get into the story specifically about what happened beyond saying, like, okay, she sees a guy every day going to school, she starts flirting with him. He rapes her, then she talks to him again, and he rapes her at his apartment. And then, when they talk to the teacher about it, he's like, oh, wait, there's more. And he's like, I have this third story that she refused to take back, where she gives the guy's name. And I'm like, okay.
Maybe at that point, you know.
And also, that was the point where I thought...
Say something.
That's the point where I thought this teacher is up to some bad business. He gives this woe is me story saying, like, look, guys, it's like Salem out here. You just hug a girl, and next thing you know, you're out of a job. Cancel culture out here.
It's hard out there for an old white guy.
It's hard out there for an old white guy who is, as we find out later in this episode, having sex with 15-year-olds, or also known as statutorily raping them.
Spoiler.
Well, that was the moment where I was like, this guy's got to be involved somehow. Maybe not in her death, but he's not on the up and up to be like, well, I did get this story that has the name and more detail. It's like, okay, three strikes. Three strikes and a name, like, you gotta tell somebody, regardless of what's going on, just out of decency. But, you know, what do I?
Yeah, it was kind of weird. Like, you do have, like, I guess you're right. I guess you do have, like, a moral obligation to say something, you know, especially if a kid could be getting hurt.
And it's possible for them to be like, oh, really? Well, what is your relationship? And he'd be like, dude, read what she just turned in, man. Maybe I made the mistake of not coming to you sooner or coming to the authorities sooner. But after this, I can't do anything else but show you what's going on.
That's true. That's true. I mean, I guess at the end of it, like, if you're not doing anything wrong, you should be able to just go straight to your superior and just be like, hey, I think you should look. We got to check this out because you have nothing to hide, you know?
And they go get this guy who was named in the third story, Chris Manahan, which to me feels like a character name where, like, they started it and then just kind of gave up. It's Chris Manahan. Manahan. And Chris Manahan almost gets thrown off the ladder he's on by Jones and tries to run away from them. And it turns out he also has, you know, he has a previous charge of rape. Which I forgot I wish I wrote down the specific word he used to insult the woman. But according to him, it was just a case of he said, she said. But they bring him in and he basically says, look, man, she was flirting with me. She's 18. She wouldn't let me say no. And then they reveal she's 15. And he's like, look, what do you want me to do? I'm a man. She told me she was 18. And then they mention she died. And he's like, here's my alibi. Here are all the names. Here are the dates. I's dotted, T's crossed. I did not murder nobody.
So let me ask you a question.
You can ask away.
What do you do?
What does who do?
What are you supposed to do to know, like, maybe what do you do is the wrong question at this point, but, like, this guy is saying that she kept saying she was 18. You know what I'm saying? Like, what do people do in the world to make sure that that doesn't happen? You know what I mean?
Well, that was
one. Do you think he's lying?
Well, the situation is twofold. The police officers that we're dealing with, they say, okay, dude's a rapist. Let's charge him with rape. And the DA basically tells them, if we don't have a complaint in, there's no point. It's not going to go anywhere. And the police detectives are upset and they're saying, like, oh, wow, so he can rape somebody, but if some other dude ends up killing her, then there's nothing we can do about it. And according to him, he had all the knowledge of her being 18. Now, I think, because we don't really see the girl at all, I think you have to be pretty dumb to just take someone's word on it that they're 18 if they're 15 years old. Also, I don't know if he's telling the whole truth.
Fair point on that.
Like, I don't know if he's telling the whole truth. So we're supposed to believe that this dude, who is a total moron, by the way, I hate this character. The actor either did a great job or he's a terrible actor. I can't tell, but I hated Chris Manahan. And
that's not funny.
I don't know. I don't feel sorry for him when he says, like, look, man, she told me she's 18 and she wanted to feel my, she came on to me like coffee, strong and hot. And it's like, Chris,
great line,
Chris, buddy.
Great line.
And he's like, she wanted to feel my bicep. I'm not made of stone. And I don't know. Maybe I just hate him.
I don't know what that meant, but
I don't believe that there was absolutely no way he could have figured out that she was under the age of 18. There's no way. 15-year-old, no way.
So let's go back to this. Isn't how she met him because she was walking home from school?
Or walking to, yeah, I think so. Walking to school.
So wouldn't she have her Catholic stuff with her?
In theory.
So I take it back.
In theory, she would. She'd have a book bag. She'd have to have something to change into. If she wasn't.
Yeah, I take it back. I take it back.
Yeah, I think the dude doesn't have a leg to stand on. But he isn't the killer, so we go back to we got nothing.
We just wasted a whole bunch of time because it doesn't matter.
But
her best friends come in, and this was a scene that I thought was great. Like, her best friends come in, and they're like, so what was going on with her? And one of the girls is like, not that, like, obviously their best friend died, so they're troubled. But one of the best friends is like, oh, yeah, I've been grounded, so I haven't been able to talk to her. But she's seemed a little distant lately. She blah, 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 you know, blah, blah, blah. And then the other best friend is just like, yeah, totally. Yeah.
What we saw was who's the real best friend of who there. You know what I mean?
Basically, yeah. No offense to what was the other girl's name? Oh, shoot. I don't remember. I know Joanna is the girl.
Like that?
I think it starts with an L.
I made that up. Samsonite.
But Joanna is the one that's like, I don't know. And I don't know if you noticed in that scene where the best friends are talking to the detectives, all three detectives have a moment where they're looking at Joanna and they're like, oh, this bitch knows something. Like their detective eyes were like, she fucking knows. She knows something that she is not saying. Even Metavoy.
For a second, I was like, hey, I think this girl knows something. And then I was like, wait a minute. Maybe she's just terrified because all these grown-ups are staring at her. And like, are just like digging her fucking laser beams into her and like not letting her breathe.
Well, if you remember the movie The Water Boy, there was.
I remember the movie The Water Boy.
But there was a scene where the guy kicking the ball is looking for the guy he's going to kick the ball to, and he goes,
okay.
And he goes, yeah, you're my bitch, and like picks out a guy. I was like, the second they saw how that character was acting, Joanna, they were like, oh, that's my bitch. She's going to tell me what's up. Not right now, because she can't say it in front of her friend, but later. Because Russell plants the seed. She does the, you know, if you think of anything that you might want to tell us, you can come back anytime and let us know what you might know that could help us with the situation.
Yeah, but does she have to stare at her like that?
No. Well, I think that's also, like, TV. Like, they have to be poignant to the fact that they know she knows something, but she has to come in willingly. Also, Joanna. Yeah,
I get that. I mean, I get what they could have done is, like, I felt like that girl could have done a good enough job. Like, maybe give her the chance to act that part before you have to, like, have them, like, just staring at her like crazy. But whatever. Doesn't matter.
And, you know, we usually speak about famous faces. Joanna was played by Cara Delizia, who was on the show So Weird in the late 90s on Disney Channel.
That's where she's from. Okay.
She was probably my first television crush, going to be honest. Going to put that out there.
You said this last time. That's right.
I thought she did a great job. She does come back to the station to say, basically in the 15-year-old way, like, do you keep a promise even though you said you would never tell no matter what? Which is basically like, I got something, but I feel bad.
Basically, like, my teacher's getting down.
And she says, yeah, she said that her and the teacher were together. They had sex in his car, but she preferred the hotel. And to that I say, I think we all would. Cars are pretty cramped, and hotel rooms got space.
Dog, I like a steering wheel digging me in the back.
Iron Claw, out now. Spoiler alert, there's a sex scene in a car.
Spoiler alert, there's... Wow.
Spoiler alert, it's depressing as all hell, and it's actually worse when you look up the true story.
Whatever, dude, as long as Kevin Von Erich gets some money, I don't care.
So they bring the teacher back in, and they're like, oh, you guys are going to have me look at some pictures. They show a picture of his ID, and he's like, that's my license. And they say... Yeah, the night manager at this hotel recognized you. So you were boning a kid in that hotel? And he's like, look, I would meet her there. And yes, we were romantic. And they were like, okay. And he's like, but I didn't kill her. Okay, don't even get that out of your head.
I've been lying to you since we talked, but...
And I also enjoy, I very much enjoy how he's like, look, okay, She was relentless, giving me notes, putting notes on my windowsills or my windshields, coming to my house, trying to talk to my wife. And it was like, okay, you know what gets in front of that? Not raping your students and telling somebody that it's happening to get her out of your class. I don't know. But what your solution was doesn't do it, which he admits eventually to strangling her in a blackout, Kyle. He was blacked out at the time.
Who asked him? Doesn't someone ask him, like, are you prone to blackouts?
Oh, yeah. Medovoid does the, is this the first one, or do you have these on occasion?
Yeah, I really like that little subtlety. I really enjoyed it.
So, yeah, that's how that case wraps up. Also, the teacher was played by a Tom Amandes, and he's a somewhat famous face if you watch the show Everwood. He was on the show Everwood. I believe he's been in a handful of stuff, but he had one of those faces where I was like, I've definitely seen this dude somewhere, and it was
based off of what I remember from Everwood. I feel like he's still dressed the same.
He does dress very odd.
Just more like Colorado Woodsy.
Hi, can you direct me to the Colorado Woodsy section?
I'm looking for some suits and shit.
I'm looking for some Colorado Woods type wear. The other story, which is the Sipowicz Sorensen case, there is
real quick. Do we think he came? Do you think that was his own wardrobe?
No, I don't think he came in his own wardrobe, Kyle. I also don't think he brought his own wardrobe. Gagoosh! Anyway, I think they made him look like that because he looks like a teacher at a Catholic school.
Yeah, like I feel like that's like what Bill Cosby used to wear, so it works out.
The second story, or the second case, is a Sipowicz Sorensen. It involves a dead homeless man. And also
this fucking story.
It introduces the character of, my gosh, what's his name? He's kind of important. Nicholas Gilbert is a homeless man that saw.
Nicholas. I just kept saying Ricky, Randy, Robbie.
Yeah, our names. Nicholas. Which were wrong. It's Nicholas. Nicholas is a homeless man who got set up with a whole electronics facility back at his in his unhoused encampment. And Sipowicz makes fun of it and to bring Ricky Schroeder over, Sorensen. And then it turns out this Nicholas saw what went down in the DOA of this homeless man. And he saw Jefe get killed by, I believe, Mauricio and Diego. But he's being tight-lipped about it because he's obviously scared, and he's also not completely there.
Doesn't Sipowicz say something along the lines like, "This guy will take a crap in the street, but at least he has a can opener."
Yeah.
Open his beans or something.
Yeah. He. What happens?
I don't know. I take that. Like. If I knew I was getting food and I needed a can opener enough to like eat, I'd take that if I had to shit in the street and still be considered homeless. Like, I think that's a win.
Also, what's really interesting, if you watch the episode repeatedly, like I have, because we keep screwing up the recording of this, but if you watch it, what happens is Sipowicz does that thing where he's like, hey, we're joking around. Hey. And then like he brings over his partner. He's like, okay, now what happened? What really happened? And this guy, because he's not all there, he has a bit of a moment where he's like, I've already said it. It's out in the air. And Sipowicz gets mad at him because the guy's a little bit off. Sipowicz gets really upset. And he's like, no, tell my partner what you told me, basically. And Sorensen, because he really enjoys helping out people, like he helped out JB, and he tries to help out people. Well, Sipowicz does the same thing, but Sorensen will go out of his way to help people. And so now Sorensen is invested in this guy, and the guy has information, but Sipowicz is like already done with him because he's pissed him off once. Like, Sipowicz is like, why the fuck would we talk to this guy? He's crazy. He's crazier than crazy. And Sorensen is like, let's grab his stuff. Let's get him into the room. Let's get him comfortable. And then he'll tell us what happened. And Sipowicz is like, nah, he's just crazy. He's just a crazy dude talking crazy. But the dude does have the names of who did what and witnessed it happen.
Yeah, but he's crazy, though. Like, how can you trust him?
And that's what this episode kind of turns into, because they bring in Mauricio. Mauricio is his name. And Mauricio is like, look, man, I don't know what you're talking about. Look, I go to this one spot. I get my money to get booze. I hang out under the overpass. We do some turpentine, and I go to sleep.
What is turpentine?
And what was great is they then go, okay, well, we have somebody who saw you and Diego kill Jefe. And he goes, who, Nicholas? Yeah, that dude's crazy.
That's weird. Did I not ask a question?
Oh, I didn't hear you. What did you say?
So what is turpentine?
Isn't that like paint remover?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
I believe it's an inhalant. I believe Charlie Kelly would be really into turpentine.
I believe would he be into just ignoring questions?
I couldn't hear what you said. I didn't hear you say it. Sorry. I apologize, Kyle. I'm not listening to the monitors because it's making us sound like robots. Because every time we try to do this, it falls apart. Anyway, so Mauricio doesn't pin it on Diego. And they're like, you're going to go to jail for murder. And he's like, I take it one day at a time, man. Even after getting...
Fair.
What's up?
It's fair. Good motto.
And this is after Sorensen hits him twice for insulting Nicholas. And he's like, look, man, I'm not going to give you Diego, so whatever you want to do. And Sorensen, worrying about Nicholas, is like, oh, well, we got to set him up downstairs in a cell because he might get killed on the street because now he's a witness to murder. And Sorensen gets that dude a pizza, gets him a Sprite.
Did you mention that he carried all of his shit from the street into the house?
Oh, yeah. They put all of his stuff into the cart and brought the cart upstairs.
My favorite thing was they bring him into the station. They're asking him questions. And Nicholas, who's supposedly crazy, still has the wherewithal to give them shit if his microwave doesn't work when he gets back to his place.
Also,
he says, normally this happens when people make me move around. So if you make me, if it's, and I know it's going to happen again, he like nags them about his microwave. It's amazing.
I also enjoy the fact that he's like, you guys have metal all over you. I can smell it. And they take off their watches. And at the end, Sipowicz is like, can I put this back on? And he goes, you live your life how you want to. And I was like, what was the difference? It was still in front of you.
Yeah. Like, what, yeah. Like, what, why did you ask him to take it off if he was just going to leave it in front of you? Like, put it in your pocket, take it out of the room. Like, 100%. I did not get that at all.
He is a very odd character. And there is this moment of humanity when Sorensen puts him in the cell, gives him a pizza, where he gives Sorensen a magnet. And Sorensen...
which, if you don't like metal, why do you have a magnet?
I don't know. And he gives Sorensen the magnet, and Sorensen's like, this is going to go up on the fridge. And he goes, oh, well, if you think so, and then sits down and starts having the pizza. And he also says, like, oh, you're one of the good ones. And Sorensen says, you are too. But what I found hilarious about that is, so the guy's issue is with metals. He has a handful of appliances in his place that he brought with him. Those all have metal in it.
Yeah.
And Sorensen was like, I'm going to put this on my fridge. And the guy doesn't, like, sour to Sorensen, which means the dude has a fridge. He has a place. It's probably filled with metal. If you got a fridge, you got metal in other places, just by logic. It was just weird. It's a very odd character,
Kirk,
Nicholas.
Kirk. He's pushing around a shopping cart.
Made of metal, in theory.
I'm not saying the whole thing's made of metal, but it's got some metal.
It's got some metal in it. Just... so that's where that story basically ends.
Pushing around the shopping cart.
And the other side story is Sipowicz runs into, what's that guy's name? Eddie Gibson. He runs into Eddie Gibson, and if you remember a couple episodes ago, Sipowicz went on a date with Eddie Gibson's niece, who, when he first described her, is like half disfigured, but when we meet her, she's way out of Sipowicz's league.
Way out of this league.
Well, Sipowicz,
like miles.
And Sipowicz straight up goes, hey, so when you talk to your niece next time, tell her I said hey. And then Eddie's like, call yourself, and pulls out a Palm Pilot, doesn't know how to use it. Hilarious. Cannot relate that to own life.
No, Kirk. He pulls out a hand pilot.
A hand pilot, yes. Yes, a hand pilot. And he doesn't know how to use it, and he says, I'm going to be taking a hammer to this by Easter. And Kyle, I don't know about you, but I can't relate that to my life in any way, shape, or form. Definitely don't have anybody in my life that doesn't.
I wrote down, this is my father.
Oh, man. Anyways, Sipowicz calls her, gets a date, but then we have a problem of what? Oh, the dependent, a child that I have. Who's going to watch the child while I try to get laid? And that creates his other issue of the episode. Who's going to watch baby Theo?
Oh, the other issue, homophobia?
Yeah, this doesn't age very well.
Not even, it's not just homophobia. It's also like the small hint of pedophilia. Because Sipowicz is basically saying, like, it's okay for you to cut my hair and touch me, but I don't want your gayness to touch my child because I don't know what you'll do to him.
So, if you haven't seen the episode, which I don't know why you'd be listening to this, but Sipowicz has to go through his Rolodex of babysitters. The problem with that is his first call, he finds out that that babysitter is now in law school. So he really doesn't have any new contacts for babysitting.
He's like supposed to be one of the best detectives in the New York area. Like, how did he not know that it'd been like 7 years
since that person watched a child?
Maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe 10. Yeah. Like,
oh, so funny. In front of John, he sets up the date. And then he turns around to John. He's like, hey, John, I'm going to ask you for a big favor. And John, I think, gets excited because he likes to babysit. He likes kids. So he's excited, and he goes, I'm going to need you to cut my hair. And then John's like, oh, okay. I mean, we can do that. Sure. And he gets him in the chair for the haircut, and John is walking on eggshells to talk to this man about anything. Anything. Any topic that he brings up to Sipowicz is like a minefield. Because if he brings up the date, then Sipowicz is like, oh, so you're eavesdropping? And if he brings up his son, Sipowicz is like, Are you trying to get with my son? And it's like, dude, John has done nothing but help everybody in this office all the time. It's such a crazy thing.
I mean, to fast forward a little bit, when he's talking to Danny and he's saying, like, I can't find a babysitter, what do you think about John? And he goes, John's fine. And he's like, yeah, but John's gay. And he goes, yeah, but, like, I trust John with my life.
Yeah. Like, and
Sipowicz, it doesn't matter. Sipowicz, what are you talking about?
I love that scene because Sorensen says, I trust John with my life. And then Sipowicz's like, do you trust him with your son? And he goes, yeah. Like, what are you talking about?
And, yeah, why would I, like, trust him with my life but not my son's? Like, what?
And then,
that's crazy.
And just how he says, look, John is gay. He's not a child molester. And it's like, when we're saying the quiet part, just right to the dude's face. Just right to him. We're like, we're cutting through all the bullshit, and we're just saying, hey, man, just because John's gay, he doesn't touch kids.
But Kirk, think about it. Up until that point, Andy is equating John as a child molester. That's why he won't have him around his kid.
Yeah.
Like, he has to hear it from another friend, another manly male. Someone say, oh, yeah, oh, Andy, you don't know this? Like, yeah, just because he's gay doesn't make him a child molester. And it's like, oh, okay, then begrudgingly, because I need it, I'll ask you.
and then probably the weirdest thing. The last two scenes of this episode are so odd to me. So when Sipowicz is getting Theo ready for John to come over, he's like put on an overshirt because if he sees three quarters of your arms, he's gonna get into just a pedophilia rage. He's gonna turn into pedophilia Hulk if he sees your arms.
He's so revved up right now on wanting to touch children that if he just sees a little bit of your arms, it's over, and I can't have that. I'm sorry.
And Theo is like, hey, I'm wearing socks, Dad. I'm already too hot. And he's like, okay, look. The guy who's coming to watch you is a friend from work, and his name is John. And Theo's like, uh-huh, will he play trucks with me?
And that's all the kid cares about. And then
Sipowicz says, now remember, if anyone hurts you, you tell me. And he's like, uh-huh. And John shows up, and I talk about, like, I never realized it until we go through all these episodes, how John is so sensitive to everybody else. Because John comes in, he's like, look, I have a gift for you, but I'm sure your dad has taught you to not take gifts from people you don't know, so I'm going to give it to your dad to give it to you. And the look on Andy's face and Theo's face is like, what? We don't do that shit at all. If people want to give shit to Theo, that's totally cool. As long as they're not gay, then we might.
Yeah, it's sad. It's like John is so worried about everyone else's feelings and no one cares that about him.
And also then, like, Theo pulls out the truck. He's like, oh, this is, I mean, it's Theo, so he's not saying this is anything. He goes, great. And he says, can John play Car Crash Pileup? And then John looks at him. He's like, can we play that? Where it's like, I'm making sure everything is cool with you. And even when Sipowicz asks him finally, he's like, as long as you're comfortable, because the whole point is that you enjoy yourself on your date. And it's like, John is a damn saint. Like, he really, he's just eating all this shit just to do something nice for someone.
And you kind of gloss over when it's just Theo and it's just Andy, and he goes, will John play Car Crash Pileup with me? Andy takes a dig at John being gay and being like, oh, that he's not the type of guy that'll like that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
it's just really funny because I think what they were trying to paint in that picture is, like, I don't think Theo – I think Theo just cares if someone's going to play with him. Like, that's all.
It really shines a light on, even though – because, I mean, when you say the phrase, like, things are different now, it's like, no shit. But just how insane that it was 100% okay on a television show for a guy to insinuate – hey, I don't trust this gay man so much. I want my child to wear long sleeves.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. Like, that is next level insanity. Like, what are you talking about?
Do you know off the top of your head, do you have the info off the top of your head, like, what year this episode came out?
I don't think, hold on, let me see. 2000. The year 2000.
In the year 2000.
Yep, Conan. It was just crazy. It's crazy. So he goes on this date, and then the last scene of this fucking show. So he goes on the date, and he's killing it with this woman that's way out of his league because he's concerned for Theo. But
Kurt, this episode came out in 2000. Will and Grace was on TV.
Nice.
So think about it. Like, they're not on the same channel, I don't think.
Oh, wow.
No, Will and Grace is NBC. ABC is Channel 7.
Holy
so NBC at Thursday at 8 o'clock is Will and Grace. And then at 10 o'clock, you can switch over to ABC and watch NYPD Blue.
Well, it's also, I mean, and we've talked about this, and maybe we'll end with that point, just because we're getting closer to our heart out here. But he goes on this date with this woman.
I don't want to hear about your heart anything, Kurt.
She's kind of, like, attracted to the fact that he's so concerned about Theo.
Yes.
She's like, oh, my gosh, you're a concerned father. Like, you've been away for so long. Would that change in her mind if he's like, well, we got a gay dude over there. And, you know, gay dudes and kids. Like, if he just was honest – with this woman, would she be like, okay, well, I'm going to go back to reading?
Yes. Being as she, being as he, I think is like the equivalent of like what, being 45, 50.
Mm-hmm.
And I know she's in, I would say she's like early 30s.
30-ish, yeah. 30s around.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so she's a little bit more liberal. The younger generation is always more liberal than the older generation in some senses. I definitely think she would have just been like, dude, what's your problem? Like,
yeah, it was literally like, oh my gosh, he cares about his son. But if he was honest about why, would it be different?
Not in a gross way, like I'm excited about it. I think in a gross way, she's only attracted to Andy because he reminds her of a, like, Uncle Eddie.
Yeah. The authority figures in her life are like cops or something.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Older white men. Yeah, for sure.
Well, it's also
the older white men. Yeah.
What's also hilarious about this fucking, so they have what I would describe as like an autistic date. where she's like, well, Andy, I mean, I wouldn't be doing anything anyway. I'd be reading or going to an author's reading. And he's like, well, those are the things you like to do. And he also is so matter-of-factly answering things where she's like, look, Andy, I don't have anybody like filling out the spaces in my calendar. And he goes, no. He just shoots down things she's saying directly to him. It's bonkers. But what's great is he's like, so you've been in the Empire State Building since you've been back? And she's like, yeah. No, I don't think so. And he's like, well, we'll head over there, see if it's changed. And she's like, will it be open? And he's like, I'll ten us in. I got the key to the city and shows his badge. And I was like, oh, so is that an abuse of your power to get laid a little bit? You can just walk into buildings.
I mean,
and just decide.
Let's be honest. Worse has been done with that badge to get laid. So,
anything about this episode you'd want to highlight or talk about?
No.
I mean, I will say
because the homeless guy part like doesn't really, not to spoil it, doesn't really matter until next episode. So,
yeah, it's really setting up for something to continue with him.
Yeah, it's a two-parter. It's just setting up for a bigger episode. But I think everyone involved in the kid's story did really well, like acting and all of that.
Oh, I agree.
The story was definitely, at the first time watching it, it definitely catches you off guard a little bit that the teacher ends up being the person.
Yeah.
But it was, but it's good.
I think especially in 2000... like that audience was probably like, holy shit, for real. But I imagine now, nowadays, I think through the lenses we have currently, the second that dude's like, well, we got to the third story and I got a little more concerned because she wouldn't take it back. And I was like, you should have been concerned at the second story and the first.
Yeah, but I kind of feel like the reason that episode happened is there must have been some kind of story in the news that involved that, like
from the headlines.
Yeah,
I think everybody, I agree with you there. Like, it, even though the subject matter is kind of messed up and we have a whole lot of homophobia and kids in danger, the acting and the story is really great. And I will say, I thought the guy who played Nicholas does a good job. It's like some of his weird inconsistency aside, like that guy does a great job playing that kind of character. And at some points, I thought he was a Josh Wolf.
Josh Wolf.
He kind of looks like Josh Wolf. No offense to Josh Wolf, but like there were just moments where I was like, oh, he kind of looks like Josh Wolf. But I thought he did a great job. So pretty decent episode, season 5, episode 6, Righting Wrongs. And we'll see you for the next one.
Thank you again for listening to this episode of NYPD Blue Balls. It's a weird one. I apologize. It'll get better as 2024 continues. If you need more NYPD Blue in your life, there's a couple of books out there. What Would Sipwits Do? A collection of articles about the show. True Blue, written about the first couple seasons. Then there's Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. And then there are two side stories written by Max Allen Collins that are actually really hard to find. But if you do, I think they're worth a read. We still have a schedule of every other Tuesday, so expect the next episode, not next Tuesday, the Tuesday after. We are on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod, and we're on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast. We hardly ever check the Twitter, and we mostly just post when new full episodes are up on the Instagram. We will check it eventually, but please be patient. Thank you so much for even listening to this for a second and watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue. It's currently on Hulu. It is no longer on Amazon Prime. I know it's possible to get the DVDs in the States, but not pretty easy anywhere else, but you got to do what you got to do to get that NYPD Blue in your life.